Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Now, last week we told you about some surprising measurements of electromagnetic frequencies along the line of the Sunrise Power Link in Alpine, and today we'll have some follow-up on that. It turns out the Alpine Education Foundation is stepping forward to fund some additional studies, so stay tuned for details on that, as well as notice of two very important meetings on this issue coming up in Alpine this week. On our Capitol Report, we'll have the results from the South Carolina Republican primary, as well as the Nevada caucus results on the presidential campaign trail. And then from Public News Service, hear about a housing discrimination bill in the state legislature aimed at protecting Section 8 housing residents. And here in East County, Senator Joel Anderson has withdrawn from his race against Supervisor Diane Jacob. If you know a healthcare hero, the Grossmont Healthcare District wants to hear from you. They're now accepting nominations, and we'll have details on today's show. Also on our health report, learn some shocking news about some very strong correlations that appear to have been found between heartburn or antacid drugs and Alzheimer's disease, as well as other forms of dementia. Listen up, motorists. We'll have some news about a full freeway closure of Highway 67 coming up later this week. And then on our sports report, we'll have a very inspiring story for you about Meg Kevlesigi, a San Diego High School graduate, former refugee, and now qualifier for the Olympics at age 40. We'll have a look at the weather coming up the next couple of days, and here's a hint, it is looking hot, hot, hot. Immigration rights cases have been put in limbo with the vacancy on the Supreme Court by the death of Justice Antonin Scalia. We'll have a report on that from Public News Service today. Helix Water District customers may be in for some drought relief coming up soon, and we'll have details. Our newsmaker today is Sherry Bromley from Mountain Hempire in Alpine, and she'll be talking about the burgeoning hemp industry in California and across the nation. And finally, on Destination East County today, we'll have all the top festivals and events coming up across our region, from a musical production of Charlotte's Web, a Black History celebration, and the final weekend of Hawk Watch up in Ramona, to previews of coming attractions, including a hike to the Valley of the Moon, the Borrego Garden Tour, a St. Patrick's Day walk and fun run through downtown El Cajon, and much, much more. We'll have all these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
The Alpine Education Foundation has agreed to fund hiring a professional independent expert to measure electromagnetic frequency, or EMF, readings along the route of the buried Sunrise Power Link in Alpine. George Barnett, president of the Alpine Education Foundation, called readings in an earlier informal study worrisome and said that having the nonprofit Alpine Education Foundation fund a separate study gives Alpine parents and residents some ownership in the matter. The Alpine controversy arose after a study conducted by engineer Robbie Faulkner and contractor Michael Milligan found high EMF levels along Alpine Boulevard. So high that the authors recommended that children in Alpine be tested regularly for leukemia, which some studies have linked to EMF exposure, though some other studies found no link or were inconclusive. Levels over 4 milligauss, or the equivalent of 0.4 microtesla, were found to double the risk in a couple of studies, with a slight increased risk at somewhat lower levels. Just how low is safe for long-term exposure remains an open question. The Alpine Union School District asked the County Office of Education to take separate measurements last week. County education officials did arrange for testing at 18 sites on the Alpine Elementary School campus. 16 of those measured under 2.5 milligauss, but two sites measured over, one substantially, though not at a classroom. A bridge on the school parking lot measured 6.6 milligauss, while a landing between the upper and lower lots measured 2.9 milligauss. These are areas closest to Alpine Boulevard. Further away, the levels dropped off sharply. The county expert in this field is expected to visit the site Tuesday to offer an assessment. Alpine Union School District Superintendent Bruce Cochran, in a letter to parents last week, stated that the results showed levels within the Environmental Protection Agency's recommended level limit of 2.5 milligauss. But the United States EPA website states, in the United States, there are no federal standards limiting electromagnetic fields from power lines and other sources to people at work or home. We asked Superintendent Cochran to back up his statement. He later corrected his remarks, stating, after reviewing all that can be found, I think it may have been better stated that the generally accepted guidance is 2.5 milligauss. He cited a Swedish recommendation and others, though there is no U.S. governmental recommendation for EMF exposure. The superintendent added that the district is working with the County Office of Education because, quote, we want to make sure we are doing right by our students. EMFs have been listed as possible carcinogens by the World Health Organization. Members of the Alpine Community Planning Group have also voiced concerns. Several members have taken actions as individuals after the first report's results were presented at last month's meeting, Barnett said. Those actions include contacting the county and the school district, as well as working with the Alpine Education Foundation and Alpine PTA president to choose a technology firm that can solicit an independent proposal for EMF measurements on Alpine Boulevard and permanent EMF monitoring at Alpine Elementary School. The tests thus far have focused only on the street itself and the Alpine Elementary School site, but street measurements near the site of the proposed Alpine High School site were much higher than in front of Alpine Elementary. There are other schools along Alpine Boulevard, including Alpine Charter High School and a preschool. In an email to East County Magazine, SDG&E Media Relations spokesperson Allison Torres indicated that SDG&E will perform EMF measurements if asked by a customer at the customer's premises. Quote, for customers' privacy reason, the results will only be shared with the customer, she added. The company has also set up an EMF center to answer customers' concerns. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
This is Miriam Raftery with a follow-up to Leon's report. On Tuesday night, over 230 Alpine residents turned out for a community meeting on the EMF issue. Alpine Union School District Superintendent Bruce Cochran presented results of a new study, this one funded by the County Office of Education. It showed levels dropping off sharply farther away from the street where those first EMF studies were done. The new study found EMF levels generally considered safe by European standards within classrooms, though some outdoor areas near the street, including a bridge over parking lots, had higher levels. Supervisor Diane Jacob called on residents to ask the California Public Utilities Commission to conduct independent measurements throughout Alpine, something that the Alpine Education Foundation is also planning to do. Jacob criticized the lack of any federal or state standard for EMF long-term or short-term exposure. While in Europe, schools cannot be closer than 200 feet from power lines, in the U.S., the standard is just 35 feet for new schools, and there are no standards at all for existing schools. That said, SDG&E sought to reassure parents that there is no solid evidence linking power lines to health concerns, and the utility has been conducting free measurements at homes and other properties on request. Don Parent, spokesman for SDG&E, noted that many common household devices also emit EMFs, such as microwave ovens and cell phones. The most emotional testimony came from Bree Rowland, a mother who lost her 18-month-old daughter Kylie to neuroblastoma last year. That's a rare form of brain cancer. Rowland said she worked along Alpine Boulevard, where the new power line is buried, while she was pregnant. The county's public health officer, Wilma Wooten, also spoke. She said there is a link between EMFs, childhood leukemia, and brain cancer, but no definitive cause and effect, and some studies have been inconclusive. She said she believes when in doubt, it's best to err on the side of caution and promised to look into the health records locally to find out whether or not there's been an increase in cancers in areas near the Sunrise Power Link. This is East County Magazine's Capital Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. This is Miriam Raftery with a Capital Report. Two key presidential contests were held on Saturday, the Nevada Democratic Caucus and the Republican primary in South Carolina. Donald Trump took South Carolina with 32% of the vote. Ted Cruz narrowly edged out Marco Rubio for second place at 22.5% to Rubio's 22.3%. Jeb Bush, John Kasich, and Ben Carson finished 4th, 5th, and 6th, respectively, each with between 7 and 8% of the vote. After the results were in, former Florida Governor Jeb Bush announced his withdrawal from the race. Though Trump scored a strong win on the heels of his victory in New Hampshire, he again failed to win a majority of voters in any state. He is polling ahead in several key upcoming primaries, but whether he can clinch the Republican nomination may hinge on whether more opponents drop out and encourage their supporters to coalesce around a single Republican competitor to Trump. In Nevada, Hillary Clinton squeaked out a win with 53% to 47% over Bernie Sanders, fueling momentum for her campaign. Clinton previously won Iowa by a slim margin but lost to Sanders in New Hampshire by a substantial amount. The Nevada Democratic Party sparked controversy over holding its caucus on a Saturday, the Sabbath, which is the Jewish day of rest, so Orthodox Jews could not vote. The party denied a request for accommodation from Jewish groups, though in a recent election, the Republican Party did provide accommodation allowing Jews to vote after sundown. Sanders is Jewish, raising speculation over how many votes he may have lost due to this action. An additional controversy is swirling around the Democratic Party's superdelegates. Those are elected officials who can cast decisive votes in this close primary race. The vast majority of superdelegates have pledged to support Clinton, giving her over 500 delegates so far, while Sanders has just 70 delegates, despite the fact that Sanders won New Hampshire by a 22% margin, ran in a near-dead heat with Clinton in Iowa, and lost by just 5% in Nevada, with none of those states being winner-take-all. The issue has prompted outcries from some progressive groups, including Move On, which has launched a petition asking the Democratic National Party to instruct superdelegates to support whoever wins the majority of the popular vote. In San Diego County, superdelegates include Congressman Scott Peters, who has pledged to support Clinton, while congressional members and superdelegates Susan Davis and Juan Vargas remain uncommitted and could cast pivotal votes if the race remains close to the end. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
A bill to make it illegal for landlords to discriminate against people with Section 8 housing vouchers was introduced in the California State Senate on Tuesday. Senate Bill 1053 by Senator Mark Leno says landlords could no longer reject potential tenants solely on their source of income or advertise that they don't take Section 8. Richard Marcantonio with the law firm and advocacy group Public Advocates says it often takes years for a family to get a federal housing voucher, and then it's very difficult to find a place in a clean, safe neighborhood that will accept it.
If they can use those vouchers at all, they can only use them in the same neighborhood where they already live. And so there's a real barrier to people having access to high-opportunity neighborhoods.
Landlords will still have the right to reject potential tenants based on credit and criminal history. They don't have to accept Section 8, but if this bill passes, they could be named in a discrimination complaint if they use it as the sole reason to reject a tenant. Seamus Roller with the Fair Housing Advocacy Group Housing California says research shows that children who move to better neighborhoods have a much better shot at success in life.
In the end, this is really about opportunity for people that really want to move their families into neighborhoods where there are better school systems, make your family have a better life. That is what this country is all about.
300,000 Californians receive Section 8 rental assistance. They contribute 30% of their income to the rent on a fair market value unit, and the federal government picks up the rest. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Republican State Senator Joel Anderson has announced that he is withdrawing from his race to unseat Supervisor Diane Jacob. Anderson indicated that instead he will be running again in 2020 when it will be an open seat due to term limits. He issued a statement about his withdrawal that reads in part, "After many discussions, it's become apparent that moving forward in this race for supervisor would potentially jeopardize other East County races' resources." Voice of San Diego reports that Anderson can start his 2020 campaign with a substantial war chest. That's because he announced his entry into the 2016 race just one day before supervisors passed a campaign finance limit that restricts supervisorial candidates to just $25,000 in donations from political parties. But Anderson took $200,000 from the San Diego Republican Party for his race. Voice of San Diego reports that legally he can transfer all that money to another campaign account. So due to a loophole in the state's campaign finance law, he can start his 2020 campaign with that $200,000 in party money, while anybody who runs against him will be bound by the $25,000 limit. Despite his fundraising ability, Anderson was considered unlikely to defeat Jacob, a popular incumbent who has stood up against special interests to protect residents in her rural East County district, which she has represented for the last six terms, spanning nearly a quarter of a century. Anderson's withdrawal narrows the race to a two-man field, with Democrat Rudy Reyes the remaining challenger to Jacob. Reyes, a Cedar Fire burn victim, has run unsuccessfully against Jacob more than once in the past. Supervisor Jacob called the announcement of Anderson's withdrawal a victory, but acknowledged that the race isn't over until June, adding that she looks forward to continuing to serve taxpayers and communities. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is a public service announcement for the Grossmont Healthcare District. Do you know a healthcare hero deserving of an award? Now in its 10th year, Healthcare Heroes is the Grossmont Healthcare District's annual awards program honoring volunteers who help advance the delivery of quality healthcare in the East County region. The district is asking public help to nominate deserving heroes. The deadline to nominate a healthcare hero is this Tuesday, February 23rd. Nominees can include frontline volunteers at a community clinic, a junior volunteer or auxiliary member, as well as a member of a service club, community group, an advocacy or policy organization. Other nominees can also include first responders or other healthcare industry professionals, including educators, pastoral care providers, and grant writers who volunteer their time beyond their professional duties and their regular scope of job responsibilities. Bob Ayers, president of the Grossmont Healthcare District, states, "We solicit the assistance of all East County residents because we want to recognize those unsung heroes of healthcare whose work might not otherwise be recognized. We want to honor those volunteers whose extraordinary care and selfless dedication inspires others to produce outcomes that provide for a healthier East County community." Awards will be presented at a luncheon on Wednesday, May 18th at the Steel Canyon Golf Club in Jamul. Last year's winners included an eye surgeon, a retired physician, twin teenage sisters, a parent of adult children with disabilities, and the first male president of the Sharp Grossmont Hospital's auxiliary. Nomination forms are available at grossmonthealthcare.org.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
This is Ed Barreno with a health report. If you're taking medication for heartburn or acid reflux disease, here's some important information you may want to know. You could be dramatically raising your risk of developing dementia, such as Alzheimer's disease. A new study has found that the risk of developing dementia increased by 44% among older patients taking popular brands of heartburn medications. The study was conducted by doctors at the German Center for Neurodegenerative Diseases and was published this week in JAMA Neurology, a medical journal published by the American Medical Association. The drugs are in a class known as proton pump inhibitors, or PPIs. They work by reducing stomach acid. PPIs include popular brand names such as Prilosec, Nexium, and Prevacid. The study compared patients age 75 or older who regularly took the medications to patients in the same age group who did not take the drugs. Also troubling, an earlier study found a link between dementia and a second class of heartburn medications known as H2 blockers. H2 blocking medications include Zantac, Pepcid, and Tagamet. The studies looked at data for thousands of patients. Researchers could not determine conclusively whether the drugs caused development of Alzheimer's, however, and researchers say clinical studies are needed. The findings are particularly disturbing in the United States, where concerns have previously been raised by medical experts who say many doctors are overprescribing heartburn medications or antacids to treat minor cases of acid reflux. A study published in the journal JAMA Internal Medicine found that up to 70% of PPI prescriptions in the United States are not necessary, and even 25% of long-term users could quit taking the medications without having heartburn reoccur. Besides potentially increasing the risk of Alzheimer's, PPI overuse can also raise the risk of chronic kidney disease by 20 to 50%, the same study found. How might heartburn medications impede cognitive abilities? PPIs can cause vitamin B12 deficiency. They may also impact levels of proteins that are linked to Alzheimer's disease, CBS News reports. So how can you reduce heartburn without resorting to potentially risky medications? Experts say you can try eating smaller meals, avoid consuming caffeine, spicy foods, and chocolate, and remain upright for several hours after every meal.
Attention motorists. Caltrans has announced a full freeway closure of State Route 67 northbound on Friday and Saturday night, February 26th and 27th. The highway will shut down between Winter Gardens Boulevard and Mapleview Streets in Lakeside at 9 p.m. each evening and reopen at 11 a.m. Saturday and Sunday mornings. Crews will be replacing asphalt pavement with a more durable concrete pavement. The work is dependent on favorable weather conditions. Detours and signs will be set up to assist motorists in bypassing the closure.
2 years ago, East County Magazine ran a story on Meb Keflezighi, the incredible local refugee-turned-athlete who won the Boston Marathon in 2014. Always dreaming bigger, Keflezighi realizing one of his biggest dreams 2 years later. He's going to his fourth Olympic Games, this time in Rio de Janeiro. The amazement doesn't stop there. At 40, Keflezighi is the oldest American to qualify for the marathon and the only marathon runner to win both the Boston and New York marathons and a medal in the Olympics, a silver medal at the 2004 Games in Athens, becoming the first American male since Frank Shorter in the 1976 Summer Games in Montreal to medal in the marathon. Keflezighi, a San Diego high school graduate who immigrated to America as a child from Eritrea and began his impressive running career at Roosevelt Junior High, placed second in Saturday's U.S. Olympic marathon trials with a time of 2 hours, 12 minutes, and 20 seconds. In 2014, when he was 39, Keflezighi won the Boston Marathon with a time of 2 hours, 8 minutes, and 37 seconds. He has had to overcome various struggles to achieve so much, such as a hip injury that prevented him from qualifying for the 2008 Beijing Games. Meb's story is truly that of a champion, and he's doing it all at the age of 40, 5 feet and 5 inches and 125 pounds. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Tasha Matthews.
This is Miriam Raftery with a weather forecast from East County Magazine on KNSJ, and it's looking hot, hot, hot. A heat wave is moving into our region with temperatures forecast to climb the 15 to 20 degrees above normal through Tuesday. Gusty offshore winds are also expected, reaching up to 45 miles an hour through the mountain passes and on slopes. Hot weather is also lowering humidity, though fire weather is not yet expected to reach critical levels. Cooler temperatures are expected midweek, along with potentially high surf along the coastal areas.
Advocates for immigrants' rights are working through the implications of the unexpected vacancy on the U.S. Supreme Court, trying to determine how it affects a case that could decide the legal status of millions of undocumented immigrants. The passing of conservative Justice Antonin Scalia leaves a court that could split 4-4 on the constitutionality of President Obama's 2012 executive order. The order grants temporary work permits to undocumented parents of American citizens and legal residents and to some people brought here as children. Soma Arias is with the Fair Immigration Reform Movement.
It has all kinds of implications for us. You know, either it goes back to that same circuit court. However, it's a decision that will eventually come back to the Supreme Court.
If the court splits down the middle, the lower court decision that put the programs known as DACA and DAPA on hold would stand. Arias thinks the case would then be appealed once again, and by that time the High Court would have a new justice confirmed during the next administration. She says the legal battle underscores the importance of the presidential race.
I think the community is very much in a fighting spirit about what this election means to us come November 8th.
The current case is set to be argued in April, and a decision is expected in June. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Relief from drought cutbacks may be in sight for Helix water users. On February 11th, the state adopted new regulations to reduce conservation mandates for water agencies that have taken steps to boost local water supplies. Under the state's new guidelines, Helix Water District is expected to get a credit for water bought from the new Carlsbad desalinization plant, as well as relief due to high inland temperatures. That could reduce the district's conservation mandate for reducing its water use to 12% instead of 20% during the summer months. The district does have to apply for the reduction, which would be in effect through October if approved. Helix customers have done their part, reducing the district's water use by 23% compared to 2013, far exceeding the governor's 20% required reduction for the district. If the restrictions on water use are eased, next up, the board could consider easing or eliminating financial penalties on water users who go over the monthly limit. Welcome relief for homeowners struggling to keep trees and other landscaping alive with hot weather already arriving in East County. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barena.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. The East County Magazine show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers.
This is Leon Thompson with East County Magazine, and today our special guest is all the way here from Alpine, California, Cherie Bromley Taylor, and she is the owner and founder of Mountain Empire in Alpine. Welcome to our show.
Thank you. Good morning, Leon.
So tell us about Mountain Empire.
My husband and I, being educators, felt like it was important to get out and start educating. And so we did that for about a year in the community, and it was well received. I rented a little space up on the boulevard in Alpine, right across from Janet's up there. I started bringing in products from different places around the globe. But our objective was to educate first, but to, and through education, provide support to the American farmer and to take the movement and the advocacy to bring hemp back to the Americas.
Well, then that begs the question, what is hemp?
Wow. Marijuana's cousin.
The M word.
For the sake of understanding, cannabis, hemp is a cannabis. It's cannabis sativa, botanically. And so when it was put in prohibition, cannabis was put on Schedule 1, and hemp went with it. And hemp is the plant that is tall and lean and grows a little bit like bamboo. It produces seeds at the top, the fibers in the stalk, and then the insides of the stalk materials they're now using to add with crete and build homes with, and as a biofuel, a byproduct.
And as parts of cars.
Absolutely.
Door panels and
absolutely
Mercedes-Benz.
Anything you can make of plastic, you can make the hemp. So, but the industrial hemp is the textile, the cordage, that plant. And it's been strangled by prohibition, and we've been importing 700,000 plus tons from China every year, and the import costs make it virtually, that's why everybody's like, hemp is so expensive. Hemp is a weed. It shouldn't be expensive. It's expensive because it's tagged on all these tariffs and the importation. And we're providing our economy to China and to Europe and to the UK, to Canada, when I believe everyone would agree that the U.S. economy could certainly use a boost. It is the
age. And our local economy.
Absolutely. It is the age of the revolution. I think through education, people understand that there's a food source in hemp and all of the other things that it's beneficial for, and we can use all of them. If we're importing them, we clearly have a need for it in the United States.
Yes. Brought in from China, 700,000 tons.
Right.
From
I think
China
it's more
alone.
Now, but.
Well, yes. Right. I mean, that was probably for 2013 or something, right?
Right, right.
So let's pick it up from there. So what are some of the uses of hemp, industrial hemp?
Well, anything you can make of plastic, you can make of hemp. And so Henry Ford had already done a prototype of a vehicle. Hemp can be made as strong as tinsel steel. So that kind of says just about anything can be made from hemp. We lean a lot in plastic, and so substitute all of that. But everything, I mean, if we can build with it, our carpets, our bedding, our linens, our vehicles, it's endless. It's totally endless what you can imagine you could do with it.
So historically, what has it been used for in the United States, or has it?
Wow. Historically, hemp has a deep history in the United States. And unfortunately, or fortunately, that's what we try to teach is hemp didn't just arrive. Hemp's been around for tens of thousands of years. Our forefathers, Washington, Adams, Jefferson, all grew hemp. There was a period when they needed to. It was part of their commerce. They used it actually as exchange. There was also a war effort during the Prohibition in the 40s where everyone was asked to grow to help with the war effort for ropes for the parachute lines and the ropes on the ships and everything. Yeah, absolutely.
Really? And before that, sails on ships, right?
The sails on Columbus's ships were made of canvas.
The Calistoga wagons.
The Calistoga wagons that came out west were made out of hemp. The fabric for some of the finest art was painted on hemp. Our Declaration of Independence was drafted on hemp. Hmm. There was a time when our forefathers wouldn't put a wet signature on a substandard, what they viewed as a substandard paper, a pulp paper. They would only put it on a hemp paper. So hemp is deep in our history.
Can you talk about the paper part again? Because I heard that pulp from wood to make paper requires muriatic acid, chlorine, and a whole bunch of horrible acids to process it.
To dump into the earth?
Yes. And then what do you do with it after you, how does that work?
I don't know. I don't know the paper processing. I do know that it takes 3.4 acres of trees, the same 1 acre of hemp, to make paper.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a whole bunch longer than 90 days to restore those trees than it does to restore that hemp.
You got that right.
And so how is it even apples and oranges? But when you realize who was behind Prohibition,
mm-hmm.
and that was the paper people and DuPont, then you have a better understanding why suddenly it had to become the bad guy, right? Because it's about the money.
Right. And wasn't the newspaper baron, didn't he own a lot of timberland and had kind of deeply invested in wood paper pulp for paper?
Yeah, William Hearst and DuPont were really the two biggies. And then there was a gentleman named Harry Anslinger who was the DEA at the time.
Oh, that's
and,
right.
You know, anybody can be bought. Right. And it was Anslinger and, enough money to demonize the cannabis, but it was cannabis marijuana they were demonizing. And so William Hearst had the tools to go along with what he wanted to do. So anytime that there was an illegal act, like a car accident or something, if a joint was found, it was because of that demon weed marijuana. And so that campaign went on until it was compelling enough that he, put cannabis. It's important to understand cannabis. Went on the Controlled Substance Act, and hemp, because it's a cannabis, went with it.
Interesting. Now, what else is on that list?
On the controlled substance list? Cocaine, heroin, methamphetamines.
What about the primary products that make heroin?
Isn't that ironic? Isn't that ironic? Boy, that's one of my rants. Yeah, a plant is on a controlled substance, folks. Wake up and smell the coffee. A plant is in the controlled substance, but not the poppies that produce heroin, not the coca plant that produces cocaine, not the mushrooms that produce psychoactive mushrooms, but cannabis, the medicine. Ask the Native Americans. Ask some of the people in India. Ask people who live the Ayurveda or homeopaths if they use anything beyond, and I'm talking cannabis, all cannabis. It's a well-being plant, even in the form of hemp protein, not any different than a protein powder you might add to your other smoothies. I have reports daily of people's improved health.
Mm-hmm.
I believe, and it's a high school philosophy, that we're just all a little bit cannabis deficient. And the logic behind that is the absence of the hemp growing. Okay, hemp is a weed. Hemp was a weed before we got involved. It was a weed. It grew in the ditches all over the place. It would produce seeds that the birds would carry, that the wind would throw. And it would be virtually everywhere. And if we hadn't jumped into Prohibition, our carpets, our buildings, our clothing, our linens, we would be saturated with it. And I don't believe our country would be in as poor health as it is.
Well, I hadn't thought about that, but I mean, as being native, I know that there's cannabinoids in the plants that grow in the ground, and animals that live on come out of the ground, and in our bodies as well. There's
Truly.
That connection, and it's medicinal. Tends to be medicinal.
Well, Leon, let me
ask.
It makes
a lot of sense.
Let me say this, because people perhaps you don't want to accept the medicinal side. Okay, simply. Mm-hmm. Do you believe that eating apples in your daily is necessary? Do you believe that drinking water is necessary for your well-being.
Well, there you go.
Okay, yeah. We produce endocannabinoids in our system.
Right.
It is counter that we don't have that. Does right. that make sense? It's counterproductive to our systems not to have access to those cannabinoids.
Right.
If it's in the hemp powder, if it's in the hemp seeds, if it's in the hemp hearts, if it's wherever we're eating it, if, just right. wherever in our food.
Right.
And it hits right below the knees when I say take water out of your daily. Now mm-hmm. you get it.
Mm-hmm.
Now you get how important it is. So why isn't mm-hmm. the cannabis and the absence of that important? So my only point was if you took it away from the medicine and just took it to just a simple,
right.
it's a simple thing we need, it's like air
of, yes.
and water. It's
or if
part
we
of,
didn't have enough zinc or calcium or something like that,
we have a deficiency.
Become deficient.
And so. Through generation after generation after generation, it's revealing itself in heights, mountains,
wow.
super rise of autism, super rise on epilepsy, super rise on cancer is killing this country. Who knows? So truly, I believe in it as a medicine, but for those that won't accept it as a medicine, accept it as a science that we're absent that science.
That's exactly right. That could open an entire plethora of medicines
and solutions.
Cures, solutions, yeah. or like you were talking as an elixir, as just an all around health elixir. Let's switch gears here.
Sure.
Let's talk about what is the demand.
Well, that's interesting. The demand is coming. That's part of what I'm trying to do. And I used the example of the t-shirts. I have t-shirts in the store that cost me $18 wholesale and I pay tax on them. I put a $25 price tag on it. I'm hardly making any money on that, okay? But the purpose is, if you buy that t-shirt, besides you'll fall in love with a hemp t-shirt, it also is putting the demand on the supply. So it says, we need this stuff. We need to have it, and we need to have it here. I'm standing on a field in Kentucky. The farmer gets 79 cents a pound for seeds in Kentucky for his hemp seeds. I charge $8 a pound in my store for the hemp seeds, and I'm paying the taxes. How is that relationship to the farmer, that 79 cents a pound to $8 to me? He's competing with importation. He's competing, and we need to fix that competition. We need to support the American farmer.
So where do you get your seeds?
I'm getting my seeds from Canada because I can't get them here yet because we're not producing them yet.
Okay.
Yet.
And so they cost like 25 times as much as if they were produced here? That's amazing.
It is.
So what besides there's cosmetics?
Absolutely.
There's oils for – is it used as a cooking oil?
Well, hemp seed oil is not a good cooking oil because
right.
it doesn't take temperature.
That's right.
But it's a
smokes,
great finishing yeah. oil, like for salads and things
right,
like that. It's a great
oil.
Finishing oil.
Uh-huh.
But it's and the oil inside the seed is the amazingness because it's uh-huh. high in omega 3, 6s, and 9s, uh-huh. super high in alkaline, single highest plant protein on the planet. I mean, this food is our superfood. People run to flaxseed, chia seeds.
Right.
Hemp seed is the most obvious.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, and we go without it.
So it's a food source,
hugely.
And the inside of the stalk of that 18-foot tall bamboo looking,
kinda, yeah, yeah,
skinny
yeah.
little thing with the little plant way up there mm-hmm. on the top, growing really tight,
mm-hmm.
and it's not growing in rows, right? It's just scattered,
it's
right? And it's vertical, and that's why you don't need weed of some sort. Can't really find a place to
well,
root.
And bugs don't really like it.
Oh,
it's a natural antimicrobial.
Okay.
Hemp is.
Uh-huh.
And, so it doesn't lend itself to funk.
Uh-huh.
I saw little furry worms in the seeds out in Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
Because just like anything that turns to flowers, it attracts butterflies and worms
mm-hmm.
and, you know, bees and things like that. But there's a control. There should be much less pesticide type things, involving hemp because it kind of controls itself, but it's not an absolute.
Is there a hemp honey?
There will be, because we will have the hemp farms that
yeah.
the bees will be bringing that honey.
Uh-huh.
But see, we've got to be putting it in the soil here in America
yes.
for that
yes.
to happen. And that's the whole point. That's my whole point.
Right.
Is to get it home. Bring
right.
it home.
So you talked about building materials and we
right.
talked about parts in cars and anything that's like fiberglass. And that's from the cellulose that's inside Mm-hmm. The hemp stock.
The inside of the stock they call shiv. And they've also discovered that they can use that as a biofuel. Mm. And so that is the stuff that really is kind of a waste product.
Mm-hmm.
And that they're mixing with the limecrete to build. Mm. And as you build these blocks and build these homes, which is just, I think, the solution for Southern California, hemp, it doesn't like bugs. So we have major termite problems in Southern California, mm-hmm. subterranean termite problems. We have major black mold problems in mm-hmm. our homes. They've gotten wet and this black mold's come in. And I mean, it's made a lot of folks really, really sick.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't grow mold. Hemp's natural antimicrobial. And there is actually on YouTube, a video of an individual that has a blowtorch against one of these hempcrete blocks for 10 minutes and couldn't catch it on fire. And so when we've got fire bugs and mold, wow. In Southern California, hemp is absolutely
especially
the right material.
Especially in our part of the county, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Any place you're in an area where there's a high burn.
Right.
If for no other reason. But right. because of we're not growing it here, mm-hmm. the product's not available here, we have to import those products. That makes building pretty prohibitive.
Yes.
And so right now, Colorado's back in the game. South Carolina's getting back in the game. Oregon's in the game. Washington, California. Mm-hmm. You have to be an institution of higher education or have a research project. But we were one of the original 10 states that passed in the Farm Bill and supported the hemp Farm Bill. So California's coming along.
But is it legal to grow hemp?
No. Not in California. Not unless you have a research project or your institution of higher education. And that's what's so sad. Because today, in California in particular, I cannot grow hemp. And I can't go anywhere to get a permit so that I can.
That doesn't make sense.
At all.
You can't get high from hemp.
No. It's not psychoactive. By definition, hemp is less than 3% THC. And so, by definition, you can't get high from it.
The stuff you get high that you get from the dispensaries that gets you high, what percentage THC is that?
Oh, that's variable, but it would be greater than 3%.
Like 27, 28?
Well, you know, I think some cannabis can be as low as 11, 12, 13, and then as high as 30 plus. You know, it just depends. Some of the growers are pretty crazy out there. But on a standard, I think in the dispensaries, you're right in the 22, 3, 4s maybe.
Mm-hmm. In San Diego County, are there businesses like yours, and are there businesses that manufacture products like edible products or cosmetics or clothing in San Diego County? Is there a hemp industry budding in San Diego?
They're trying. We have our advocates, to be sure. There aren't too many shops. It kind of goes along with the hemp kumbaya stuff. I remember when I first opened my store, I got a phone call from a woman up in Washington, and she said, I don't know where you're located or what you have in mind, but we had a 2,200 square foot store, and we couldn't sell. I mean, the surfers love the stuff, but they don't have any money. And so she was trying to caution me that if I was going to put hemp bracelets and necklaces and skateboards in there, I was probably going to have to close the doors because I wasn't going to sell anything. And in fact, it takes a lot of hemp hearts to pay the rent. But again, I'm about education.
Uh-huh.
And I'm a licensed nonprofit. Mm-hmm. Non-tax exempt. And so it's my duty and responsibility to educate the community and do community outreach.
Yeah.
And so paying the rent is not my first priority.
Right.
Commerce in the city, there are different people who are getting on board, who are staying educated. There's different people who are trying to share awareness. I think that there's a company on the coast a bit, though I don't know them personally. I know that there's a group in mid-San Diego, but they're also associated with the MMJ side, mm-hmm. that crossover.
Who's the biggest retailer of hemp products?
In my opinion? Do you know something I don't know? It might be me.
I think I might know.
Okay.
Whole Foods.
Okay, I get what you're saying.
But I was amazed at how many products were made out of hemp at Whole Foods.
Right. Right. Hallelujah.
From makeup to
hallelujah.
Hemp milk.
Yep. If it was a product that people were using.
Right.
I'm actually offering a class next month on to show people how to make their own hemp milk. And I'm excited every day. I have a hemp coffee filter.
Mm-hmm.
I have contacted a woman who is making hemp nut milk bags out of hemp. And so anything, you know, and everything.
I know. I found a website and I lost it. If you sent them your waist and inseam and $100, they would make you a pair of blue jeans out of hemp. They were originally built with the rivets and the button down fly and the watch pocket and the whole thing.
And a little embroidered cannabis leaf on the pocket.
Is that right?
Instead of the Levi tagging, a little embroidered cannabis.
You could import fabric from China that was basically hemp canvas.
Correct.
And you could make blue jeans.
Absolutely.
And that's what obviously this company is doing. I think they're, like you said, I think they're in France or in, how much better and how much more profitable would it be if we could grow it here?
Oh man.
And process the fiber, which is the outside of the industrial hemp plant stem, and break that down into the fine fibers that it can be and use it here for that.
Yeah, I had an opportunity last week. I had a gentleman come into the store, and he evidently has the ear of a councilman down in Imperial Valley.
Oh.
And so he invited me to come and spend some time at the table with this councilman, convincing him of how we could change the farming in the Imperial Valley. Mm-hmm. And with the water problems in California,
right.
I think it's important for your listeners to know hemp would take a third less water than cotton, and we're growing a lot of cotton in California. We're also got a huge almond industry, and the water in the almond industry is ridiculous. But in the Imperial Valley, hemp could easily be a solution. I think it would be a really smart move. We have the climate. We have the resources. We have the people. And I think we need the economy and we need the stimulation. And it's just about getting the information to the right people about positioning ourselves, because we're a little new at the game, but we could certainly be thinking about it. We're not an institution of higher education, but there's a group of gentlemen that are on the hemp road trip right now that started at the Iowa caucus, and they're going to each one of the campaigns promoting that hemp be moved off of Schedule 1. And so when that happens, it's going to be a hemp free for all, truly.
Right.
And so
that's why it's an all cash business, even if it's
business conference. But 49% of the national industry lies in California.
Mm.
And so California, you just need to wake up, put seed in the ground.
Right.
It's here. The time is now.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you one last question.
Sure.
And that is there anything we haven't talked about that you'd like?
Gosh.
Yes. Yeah. I've been to your store, Mountain Hempire, which, by the way, for our readers, that's Mountain Hempire, all spelled out, .com. MountainHempire.com. Our guest has been Cherie Bromley Taylor, who is the founder and owner of Mountain Hempire in Alpine. And she's also an advocate for hemp and industrial hemp, not only good for you, but good for our economy. So I thank you so much for being here.
And thank you, Leon. I really appreciate the opportunity.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This is Leon Thompson.
And this is Tasha Matthews with this week's Destination East County, which includes a Black History celebration and a Waterwise garden tour.
Plus, we'll have previews of coming attractions, including a concert by country music stars the Gatlin Brothers, a moonlight hike in Anza Borrego Desert, an all-night run and walk at Pirate's Cove along Lake Cuyamaca shores, and a St. Patrick's weekend run and walk in downtown El Cajon to benefit local charities. So stay tuned for all these events and more on Destination East County.
Paving the Way, a celebration of Black history, will feature musical performances, theater, dance, politics, and more. The event will be held at Cuyamaca College on Friday, February 26th at 7:30 p.m., directed by Robert Chambers. For more details, you can visit cuyamaca.edu.
Wilbur is no ordinary pig. When Wilbur is born a runt, Fern's dad wants to kill it. Fern begs him not to. Charlotte the Spider comes up with a plan to save Wilbur from the dinner table in this musical and dance play performed by the Pickwick Players in Santee with a diverse cast. This is a story of friendship, love, and the ultimate sacrifice with Templeton the Rat and all the other Barnyard characters. Charlotte's Web will play Friday and Saturday, February 26th and 27th at 7:30 p.m. with matinees on Saturday and Sunday, February 27th and 28th at 2 p.m. You can go to pickwickplayers.net for more information. The Water Conservation Garden invites the public to its first annual WaterWise Home Garden Tour on Saturday, March 26th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. The self-guided tour will highlight a variety of five beautiful gardens located in El Cajon, La Mesa, and Rancho San Diego, utilizing an array of color, variety, and low water usage. Learn about using natives, succulents, cacti, and Mediterranean plants, and how you can design your yard for low water usage plants. The gardens emphasize plants from semi-arid regions of the world. Succulent cuttings from many of the home tours will be on sale, as well as other garden and home items such as birdhouses, pottery, garden jewelry, all handmade by local artisans. The garden's director of horticulture will be available to talk about how to redesign your landscape using low water usage plants. For tickets and information, you can visit thegarden.org.
Jack Enos, an award-winning local journalist and author, has made an extensive study of San Diego's fascinating and often quirky history. He'll be speaking about his latest book, San Diego Legends, at the Santee Library on Saturday, February 27th at 1 p.m.
Arg! A run and walk at Pirate's Cove along the shores of Lake Cuyamaca will begin on Friday, March 4th. This unique event includes both a 12-hour and a 24-hour option, with the 24-hour portion kicking off at 8 a.m. and a 12-hour all-night run and walk starting off at 8 p.m. All entrants will receive a T-shirt, hat, and other swag with a Pirate's Cove logo. Winners will receive Pirate Buckles awards, and you can also win a prize for the best pirate costume. For more information, you can visit sdpiratescove1224.com.
Hawkwatch, a free celebration of raptors, continues at the Wildlife Research Institute in Ramona Grasslands at 10 a.m. each Saturday in February, rain or shine. You can observe both wintering and resident raptors, including eagles, hawks, falcons, and owls. 19 species of raptors have been recorded at this raptor hotspot, where you will learn the life histories of these beautiful birds, as well as the importance of Ramona Grasslands ecosystem. In addition to wild raptors, you will also see trained raptors and owls up close. Bring binoculars if you have them, though scopes will be provided. For more information, you can visit wildliferesearch.org. Now for a preview of coming attractions.
Country music greats Larry Gatlin and the Gatlin Brothers will be performing in concert at Sequan's Live and Up Close Theater on Saturday, March 12th at 8 p.m. Grammy Award-winning Larry Gatlin has written hit songs for many famous musical stars, including Elvis Presley, Glenn Campbell, and Johnny Cash. For tickets and more information, you can visit sequan.com.
Registration is now open for East County's St. Patrick's Day Half Marathon, 5K Run and Walk, Green Mile, and Tribes and Clans competition, which will be held this year on Saturday, March 12th, the weekend before St. Patrick's Day. This event aims to involve the entire family in fun and fitness. The Green Mile Fun Run, an enjoyable short-distance non-competitive event, is also available. This event will also feature a Finish Line Festival, Health Wellness Fair, and a Craft and Beer Invitational. Participants are encouraged to wear green and vie for prizes for best costumes. Funds raised will benefit several East County charities. This event is hosted by the Run East County Foundation. To register, volunteer, or get more information, you can visit stpatricksdayhalf.com.
More than 60 artists will exhibit their works at the Circle of Art show in Borrego Springs on Saturday and Sunday, March 12th and 13th. The artists' work in a variety of media, including fine arts, oils, watercolors, photography, sculpture, pottery and ceramics, jewelry, fabric art, and more. This two-day show includes music, food, and free admission. This event will be held in Christmas Tree Circle in the heart of Borrego Springs. For more information, you can visit circleofart.org.
The Borona Cultural Museum is offering classes on Native American culture and crafts, including a Native foods cooking class using Native yucca on March 12th. Classes are from 10:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. The Barona Cultural Center and Museum is located on the Barona Indian Reservation in Lakeside. For more information, you can visit baronamuseum.org.
It's garden tour time in the desert, and the 18th annual Borrego Springs Garden Tour invites visitors to experience private gardens and homes at their own pace from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Saturday, March 19th. Attractions include Happy Days, former home of James and Helen Copley at La Casa del Zorro Resort, and five other gardens, several with open homes located in beautiful Borrego Springs during the height of the spring bloom. For tickets and information, visit the Borrego Desert Nature Center, located on Palm Canyon Drive in Borrego Springs, or online at abdnha.org. The Borrego Garden Tour is a fundraising event in support of the Anza Borrego Desert Natural History Association, a 45-year-old nonprofit educational organization. That's all for this week. You can find details on all these events and more on our calendar and in our Festivals and Events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is a most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
This is Ed Barrena for East County Magazine and KNSJ with some important safety tips. On average, 20,000 deaths and 21 million medical visits occur annually, Fire Chief Sam DiGiovanna reminds us. Firefighters and paramedics respond to thousands of accidents every day, he says. Chief DiGiovanna, author of the Chief's Corner column on East County Magazine, offers these tips to help prevent accidents in your home. In the bathroom, cleaners should be locked away, out of the reach of children. Medications, scissors, razor blades, and cleaning supplies should be kept in a locked cabinet or out of the reach of children and pets. Non-skid stickers in the tub and shower can prevent slips and falls. Children should not be left unattended in or around the pool. Pool areas should be fenced in with a gate secured with a child-proof safety lock or latch. Electrical safety. Children can stick objects in open sockets and get hurt. Unused electrical outlets must have safety plugs to prevent accidental electrocution from foreign objects being put in the socket. Every home should have a fire extinguisher. Smoke and carbon monoxide detectors should be on each floor of the home and tested monthly. Batteries should be changed at least every 6 months or as necessary. A working fire extinguisher must be accessible. Keep paper towels, plastic plates, plastic utensils, and anything other than cooking equipment away from the stove. These items can easily start a fire if left too close to the range. Keep pesticides and cleaners away from children. Store chemicals in a locked cabinet or keep on a high shelf that children cannot reach. Do not spray bug spray or pesticides near a child's toys, since toys tend to go into a child's mouth. In addition, never leave household chemicals unattended. Unfortunately, small children may try to open the products and drink the contents.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barrena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.